good afternoon again, everybody. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. I'm Paul Tatino. He is Howard Cross. That would be at Howard Cross 87 or at Giants WFAN. Of course, if you want to join in on the next hour of Giants conversation, you can call us up at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, or on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll be here till 1 o'clock Eastern time to talk about the Giants and, of course, their upcoming game on Thursday Night Football against the Philadelphia Eagles down at the Link. The Giants are in a very good position right now to make the playoffs. They need one win against either the Eagles or the Redskins, or for that matter, a loss by one of the wild card contenders to clinch a playoff spot. If they take care of their own business, Howard, it's all elementary.
Hey, sweep around your own front porch. That's all it's about, being able to take care of your own thing. So many years the Giants have had, you know, these scenarios where if we need someone to do something, or if they lose and we can get in, now they have they're in control, they're in the driver's seat. So to the winner goes the spoils in this case. And
now,
if they keep winning, they'll keep rolling.
Now, I've been asked questions by a bunch of my friends who've called me and some people on even on Twitter wanting to know why, with the Redskins losing last night, the Giants have not clinched a playoff spot. The reason is very simple.
Okay.
The Giants could still wind up losing their final two games and finish at 10-6. If they are involved in a wild card tiebreaker with an identical 10-6 record as the Lions and the Buccaneers, the Giants would be left out of the playoffs. That would mean Green Bay and Atlanta won their respective divisions, and the Giants, Buccaneers, and Lions were all fighting in conjunction for a wild card at 10-6. That scenario, of course, requires a whole lot of wins and losses to happen over the next 2 weeks. First and foremost, it would require the Giants to lose two games, which I don't think they plan to do, Howard.
No, they're not planning on doing it. Like I said, again, we're the team now that other teams are talking about. Hey, I hope that they lose one. If they lose one, they can help us out. You don't want help at this time of the year. You want to be in control. And right now, the Giants are definitely in control.
All right, so once again, 201-939-4513 is the phone number if you'd like to give us a call. There were some transactions made earlier this morning. Now, the guys who have been brought onto the 53-man roster may or may not have roles over the final 2 weeks, but we do know one of the guys who's been taken off the roster was supposed to be someone we would see during the postseason. That's running back Shane Vereen, now been placed on IR because of a re-injury to his triceps muscle that had kept him out since week three, came back the other day, took three snaps, had to come out of the game, and unfortunately his season is over.
Well, I kind of, you know, was wondering how long does it take for that to heal when he came back in. It's one of those things that you don't know until you really, really fired really hard. And playing running back, there's always the blocking where you're extending your arm. And when you extend your arm, that's when your tricep fires. There's also when you're running the ball, if someone's pulling at it and you're fighting against them trying to hold that ball in there. So, you know, I'm happy that he's going to be okay. But you have to wonder, like, when muscle tears like that, that you're affected so much by holding the ball and blocking.
Yeah, he had expressed to us that the doctors had told him when he got hurt against Washington, it was a rare football injury, that the triceps is not one that usually gets torn.
It's different. It's difficult because, again, you actually have to have your arm locked out for it to happen. Usually you'll hurt your elbow or something before that, but in his case, he tore the tricep. And if you tear it, it's a tough injury.
All right, so the Giants also have placed on injured reserve backup quarterback Ryan Nassib, who for the last month or so had been battling a sore elbow, and now he is also lost for the season. On the flip side, the Giants have activated two players. Former Notre Dame defensive end, Ishaq Williams, if you guys know his story, fellow who barely played any football at Notre Dame for a year and a half or so, had gone through some suspensions, et cetera, and then out of the blue, winds up showing up as a rookie free agent at Giants camp over the summer. They tried him out at linebacker some. They saw some good things. They put him on the practice squad, and now he's on the active 53. So that is quite a story, quite a Rudy story, if you will, for Ishaq Williams, making the 53. And then also running back George Wynn, also a practice squad veteran who's been on a number of organizations in the last three seasons. He was on the Giants practice squad earlier this year. He out of the University of Cincinnati in the Big East. He has now also been added to the roster. Wynn, by the way, known as a good special teams guy. Okay. I only bring that up because the Giants are playing a very good special teams team in the Philadelphia Eagles. So I don't know if he's going to be activated or not. I would say chances are probably not. But if he is, you know it's because of special teams.
Well, think of this. With Shane Vereen being out and he was active last week, if this kid comes in and he's a special teams player and can be really effective, then he'll get an opportunity because once Shane steps out, you can just actually put another back in the game. And he played better special teams, takes Paul Perkins out of the special teams team. With Jennings, you want to make sure that Jennings is as healthy as possible because he's the guy supposed to be carrying most of the load. But if you can rest him as much as possible and give him some more opportunities, then this kid would be perfect for that moment.
It'll be interesting also to see if Nat Burhe comes out of concussion protocol because the Giants could use an extra defensive back and a special teamer. Mm-hmm. Nat Burhe does both. Janoris Jenkins right now battling a bruised back, and Coach McAdoo said yesterday it's painful and did not have anything else to tell us about that.
It's painful.
It's painful.
That's a good medical description of what's going on.
It's painful.
Yeah, it hurts.
It's painful.
Like, how's he feeling? It hurts. Let it go.
That's it. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with him. We do know the Giants are going to be out to practice in a short while today, and obviously there'll be a post-practice injury report. Stay tuned to Giants.com, and I'm sure we'll have all that information for you once that occurs, and of course also later on today on MSG's Giants Press Conference Live. In the meantime, Howard, I think it's time we get to our phone calls and some of our Twitter comments. I need to get the phone call directory up first, which I did not do.
Okay.
So what I will do instead is we're going to go to some Twitter questions first. While you can answer some of those, I will get the phone call number up, the sheet up, and we'll get to some of your calls in just a second. Giants Chat, hashtag Giants Chat, of course, is our log on here. If you want to hit us up, and for some reason, it's not coming up. Oh, I spelled it wrong. That's good.
Wow.
Nice. Typo. Nice job, Tino. By the way, in case you forgot, the Giants beat the Eagles 28-23 about a month ago at MetLife Stadium. That was a game where Eli Manning threw four touchdown passes, and the Giants had a double-digit lead after three quarters, and then the Eagles came back with two field goals in the fourth to make it a one-score game.
Okay.
Well, do you remember that game at all?
I do. I do. I remember it. I remember that the Giants defense played exceptionally well later on in the game. Couple things got away from them. You got to keep your foot on the throat, so to speak, the entire time. And we'll see if they can continue to do that this week when they play them Thursday night.
All right. We have, let's see here. Got people asking about the playoff scenario. Understand. AJ Marshall says, got to finish the season strong on the road. Starts Thursday against the Eagles. Clinch a playoff spot, and then the Redskins. Well, we know the Giants are going to be a road playoff team, so
yeah,
might as well get some practice at it.
I mean, unless Dallas loses all the rest of their games or something, and I don't even think that would even do it. But so it's too many scenarios. Someone was asking me at work the other day to explain the playoff scenario, and I actually took out the whiteboard and started drawing things. They're like, too much energy. Let's go back to work. Let's get back started.
The honest-to-God truth, it's kind of like being an air traffic controller. It's extremely difficult and just really not worth the headache to even go about doing it.
I always say it's like herding cats. Until you get to the end, it's herding cats. You don't know who's going to jump out, who's going to get out of line, who's going to be pawing something on the side. So you just got to keep watching and hoping that they get there.
All right, folks, thanks for watching on Twitter. If you'd like to check in on the rest of the program here at Big Blue Kickoff Live, head over to Giants.com on the internet or the Giants app on your telephone. All right, as we continue, we will go to the phones. Dre from Atlanta, you are first on the show. Hello.
Always been a good leader. Hey, what's going on, Tino?
What's going on, man?
Hey, Howard.
How's
it
going? Very good.
All right. Hey, we actually spoke last week in reference to the running game and offensive line. And it seemed like I don't know if you saw the same thing, but I saw a changing of the guards. It seemed like that Paul Perkins was having a lot more success against the Lions line than Jenkins,
Jennings.
Jennings was. Mm-hmm. You know, and it seems like he has, like you said, you work hard in practice. You know, it should correlate on the field. It seems like the coaches are having a lot more trust in Perkins in certain situations. Have you seen the same thing?
I think Jennings is like that guy that comes in and pounds you and pounds you and pounds you. Then when Perkins comes in, he's the ultimate change of pace back for the Giants right now. It's a different running style. He's a quick cutter. He's shifty, whereas Jennings kind of leads up in there and he tries to overpower them in the middle and trying to run through arm tackles. Perkins is the guy who's trying to look for that real open space and try to hit it. That will get him in trouble sometimes, but when he gets it, he gets a few more yards.
I think it's fair to say, the other day, I guess Perkins had, 11 carries for 56 yards, which is his season high during this rookie year that he's having. I think it's safe to say, though, Howard, he, over the last month or so, has definitely shown us the ability to pick up some things. He's not making some of the typical rookie mistakes you would think he might make. He looks pretty poised.
Oh, he does. He looks poised. So, like I said, it's all about rhythm and understanding. You know, Jennings being the big back, he goes in, he starts hitting some holes. Perkins has learned not to sit on the side and, like, you know, he's not a spectator. He's watching, trying to see, okay, so, all right, so he's having a problem with that guy. So-and-so's having a problem with that guy. Jennings comes off. They talk to each other about what's mm-hmm. going on out there. And then he goes out and tries to take advantage of what's been done already.
The only thing I would say, I really haven't seen him do too much because when he is in the game, he's usually either getting the ball in the backfield or flaring out to maybe catch a pass. I haven't seen him try to pick up a blitz very often.
Oh, he's done it.
He's done it a couple times. Not much.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Right now they haven't determined the teams that have been playing. They haven't determined, okay, let's blitz him to keep him in. You know, mm-hmm. when he comes in, you've seen him do the double A gap. They fake the double A gap. Sometimes, and then he'll step into the middle, and that's when you see him flaring out.
Right.
But if they don't come, if they do come, that he's the guy in the middle who's stopping the double A gap blitz. So that's it, he's there.
All right, Dre.
In my last comment, I've been hearing reading a lot of flack on Eric Flowers on that one sack tour on Eli, and from listening to, you know, Odell and some of the other players, That sack wasn't actually Eric Flowers' fault. The ball was supposed to be out. Odell actually didn't get the call, the change in the call at the line, and ran the wrong route. That's why Eli was pretty much yelling and going off. And then it was actually confirmed when they did a prime that Odell ran the wrong route and was being yelled at by Eli.
You know what, Dre? I didn't see that conversation or that explanation by Odell, but you know what I love about what you just said? And Howard's going to love this too, because that's exactly why people should never assume and point the finger and blame somebody, because there a lot of times is a story that you don't know that explains it away and doesn't put the blame on the guy you think deserves the blame.
Well, when he did get sacked, Eli gets up with his hands up. He's looking before the play is actually – goes off, you see Odell with his hands out looking at Eli, and Eli's like looking at him.
Like, what's
that? Then the play goes off, and they're like, Eli's like, dude, like, so like, you're getting killed back here. So it's some of those things, but it won't matter. People are going to look at it, and they're going to look for, if someone's unhappy with something, they're always unhappy with it. If they're not, you know, if someone's happy with it, they'll find something good about it. I think they played a pretty good game. I think Flowers, you know, after, and I'm going to tell you what I saw the difference. After JPP went over and spoke to him on the sideline, his play is kind of like, it's like, I don't know if he challenged him, if he, whatever he was saying to him, it meant something to him. And Flowers is really trying to get after it now.
Is that all, Dre?
Yep.
Thank you.
Point, Eli actually mentioned it in his post-game conference in reference to Odell running around.
Good stuff.
And taking the sack. But thanks.
Thank you.
No problem.
All right.
You know, sometimes fans just have that group mentality, and they want to make a voodoo doll of a particular player, and they just want to stick pins in him all day long.
Hey, some players.
You know how that goes?
Hey, look, some players need it. I will not doubt it. I've seen some guys that I've been like, how is this guy out here? And then sometimes it's funny because you don't know. Even we don't know. That's the thing you have to understand. When we're talking about this and we're giving our opinions and what we see, Paulie does an incredible job of charting and keeping track of things. You can chart. We can keep track of everything. We don't know what the calls are.
No.
We're just looking at the outcomes, and that's really what we do most of the time.
I will say one other thing. You know, you talk about sometimes how, you know, you know or you don't know or you guess. The other thing is, too, even the guys in the booth, and you'll listen to a Troy Aikman or a Chris Collinsworth or those guys, and sometimes they'll try to explain something to you on TV, and the fact of the matter is, even we'll hear from the players and coaches a couple days later, and they're like, no, they got it wrong, too.
Yeah.
So don't think just because you heard it from Troy Aikman or Chris Collinsworth that they got it right.
Like I said, when you're sitting in a booth, you are basically talking about formations, plays, coverages, who's pulling who. The thing that you get right, look at that block. When a guy gets knocked down, you know what's happening.
Yeah.
If a guy totally misses somebody and you see that guy turn around and face the guy as he's, as he's making the tackle or the sack, you know that guy missed his block.
Yeah.
That's the indicator that oh, look out. That lookout thing, that's when you know. But outside of that, a lot of times we're guessing. Like, I think it was the Dallas game. We're watching the game. They're playing a wide cover two. I'm thinking, man, the tight end down the middle. And the tight end never went down the middle. I'm like, why didn't the tight end go down the middle? Then, you know, it's just it's just certain things. I think Lee may have been able to cover the tight end. So you just don't know.
All right. Let's see. Here we have one bad hombre just wants to make note that Perkins picked up Ansa on a stunt on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Again, I didn't say he's never done it. I just said he hasn't done it a lot.
No,
Jennings has done more of that than Perkins has.
No. I think that fair enough is like when he's in the game, if you've measured how many plays and what the plays are, if he has, you know, five runs and five passes, you know, out of the five passes, there may be two blitzes.
Right.
He has to block on those two blitzes.
He's had to do it sometimes,
so
question.
When he's doing it, he seems to be doing it okay, and he seems to know who to get.
We also have somebody here, Dre Day 2014 says, can somebody please tell the Giants that Jennings is not a big power back? He says he goes down with arm tackles too often.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say that he pretty much does power through a lot of stuff. Arm tackles are when someone's just getting a hand on you. It's not when someone's got their full girth on you. If Snacks puts his arm on you, I don't care who you are, you're going down. So it's pretty good.
We have another one here. Carlos Rivera says the key to success going forward and into the playoffs lies basically heavily on the defense. True or false?
Yes, but that's every team. I mean, if you have a good defense.
That's a pretty old recipe,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I think that if you think about it this way, if you have a good defense and you can shut a team down, you don't have to score that many points. You just got to keep them from scoring. And sometimes in defense, you know, you get that turnover for a touchdown. So it's there.
We have an interesting comment here. Genova says, do you anticipate any wrinkles to the Giants' offense after moving forward to get Eli more comfortable and get longer plays to develop? You know what, Howard? I don't know. I think you kind of are what you are. I don't know that there's a whole lot of new bags of tricks they're going to be bringing out at this stage of the game.
It you know what, you try to get things going in the right direction. You try to get things, you make it as good as possible, but I don't know what to tell you. You play, you study, you work at it, and you try to self scout. You do all these things in hopes that when the time comes, the plays are going to work. Execution, guys, early in the season, mid season, late season, playoffs. Execution. Can you find guys that are going to be healthy enough to execute the plays? And when they're called, you got to be able to do them.
All right, let's see what we can do here. We've got Scott from Washington, D.C., who is next on the program. Hello, Scott. Scott, you're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, guys. Two
Hi.
Questions for Mr. Cross and one comment for you, Paul. I've seen now two or three sacks this year surrendered by the Giants where a left side offensive lineman was pretty clearly assigned to block the left side DN, meaning he had to slide all the way across. This happened in the last game when Pugh tried to come across and block at the end, and it happened once earlier in the season. I'm trying to get that pass pro is just not working. I'm trying to get the logic of why you would assign a left side offensive lineman to block a left side defensive end.
You mean like how is it sometimes that the guard winds up blocking out on the defensive end?
It looked as though Pugh was pulling on the, but it was a pass play, and Pugh was the primary blocker on the rushing end on the other side of the line.
Well, I'm not really sure why I would look that way. The only thing I could think of is that if an interior lineman's pulling to the outside and the quarterback's actually throwing the ball, that would mean imply there's some sort of play action. So the action itself is to look like the run before it happens. And if it doesn't work, then that's when you see that.
I'm going to try to call up that play for you. Okay? No, I have access to it. I'm going to try to call it up for you, and this way maybe Howard can actually specifically address it. So, go ahead.
It sure looks like the primary blocking assignment is an offensive lineman on the other side of the line. Another O-line issue is that, I watch every snap. I've watched every snap for 40 years. Okay. This season and last, it seems as though whenever they pull a guard, invariably, that's the hole the running back's going for. Now, I appreciate that running behind the pulling guard worked. It worked great with Snee for years. Hasn't been working so great since Snee hasn't been on the team. But what I want to ask is there any value to pulling a guard and running misdirection? Seems as though they've fallen into a little bit of a rut where every time the guard pulls, the back goes behind the pulling guard. Is there any value to pulling a guard and running misdirection?
The reason why you usually don't pull and run in the counter, so to speak, is that once you've pulled, if the linebacker doesn't flow with the pull, he'll run right up and make a tackle in the backfield. Because you create a big gap there. Usually when you're pulling, the offensive tackle's blocking down. He's trying to close the gap that the guard's vacating. So if you pull, the defensive end will be coming off of his hip. So there are two guys that can make the play on the backside. That's why you don't see a lot of cutback plays when you see a guard pulling from the position. The other thing is, think of it this way. When you're pulling, there are two looks that you have to understand if you're the back. If he pulls and he kicks out, then he runs off the tackle of the guard's butt inside. If he pulls and the guard blocks down, then he runs off the guard's butt outside. So there's a lot to the pull, and it depends a lot on where the linebacker's playing. If the linebacker starts to understand the pull, he'll try to hide inside a little bit and wait for the guard to kind of pass him and try to slip behind him so he can make the play. So there's a lot of variables, and guys, both teams are studying. One team's studying if he pulls, this is what it looks like. Once he's done it once or twice, let me start. Lee did it the other night in the Dallas game. He started trying to time the pull so he could get in right behind the guard's block.
All right. Well, Elliott seems to do pretty good with the jump cut going misdirection. I think it's fair to say that the Giants running game needs some improvement. And I guess just everyone's got to play better. I understand that the roster is what it is. I'm not going to get into the Flowers controversy. Everyone's got to play better, no doubt about it.
All right, yeah. Now, I just called up the play for Howard that you're talking about when Pugh had to come out from his left guard spot to take the left defensive end. You just saw it, Howard.
So Pugh is not
– here it is here.
Pugh, what's happened is Perkins comes up. Perkins has to hit the guy, but he's on top of him so quickly that Perkins lets him go.
Right.
But Pugh's
right, he's
not,
unblocked. The DN is unblocked.
Yeah, but it's not
the first contact with an offensive lineman is with Pugh.
Okay, but the ideal in that play is not for Pugh to come across. Let me look at it one more time, and
okay.
I can here.
Okay.
Of explaining it. So when the play happens, the ball is snapped. The one guy goes on the ground in front of the tackle, in sort of a twist. When Pugh's coming across, Pugh is seeing the unblocked man. So, obviously, there's a blitz or something over there that they're looking at, so they're trying to get to it. But Pugh,
that's a pass play. I don't recall there being run action in there. It seemed that the primary blocking responsibility was on the left guard
end. The reason why I'm telling you this is because you don't really know what's happening because he's hit before he takes a step. So the ball snapped, the defensive end's in the backfield, Pugh pulls over to hit him before he can take a step. He turns
around. How does the DN get in the backfield without getting hit?
because, again, remember when I told you, as you're laughing, just think about this. Remember when I told you that the play is designed to look like another play? When Eli turns his back to the defensive end, he puts the ball out to show it to the back. That implies that the guard's pulling over, like the back's going to follow the guard through the hole. Mm-hmm. So, but the back doesn't hit the defensive end, and the defensive end's all the way uphill before Pugh can get to him.
See, that's the play fake, Howard. Right there.
So that's so what you're saying is how can Pugh do it? I'm telling you, they're running. It's like they run the draw the exact same way. When he comes back, Pugh's coming over. He hands the ball to the back. The back goes through the hole behind Pugh. In this case, when he gives the ball fake to the back, the defensive end's already right there. So the defensive end is playing the play very well.
Got to give credit to the other guys sometimes. They get paid too.
It happens.
All right. So that takes care of that play.
There you go.
Thank you. Appreciate the phone call. Let's see who's next. Let me get out of the video and go to next guy on the line. Is Danielle from Florida. You're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hi, guys. How you doing this afternoon?
Great, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. And listen, I've been a Giants fan since the day I was born in 94, and I think that this could be the good year for them. They've been playing very good defense lately.
Well, no question about that. The defense has really been kind of rowing the boat over the course of the last couple of months. And, you know, they keep it up. Certainly they could do a lot of good things. No question about it.
Yes, guys. And I wanted to get your opinion about Victor Cruz, because there's been a lot of talk about him being that was his final game in MetLife Stadium. Well, I think sometimes the critics don't know what they'll talk about, but it's up to Victor Cruz and the Giants staff what they want to do with him. But I say forget about worrying about next year and just focus on this year and then deal with that.
Hey, that's a good idea.
That's exactly the way you do that. I mean, that's exactly how you do it. I think the Victor Cruz thing is, I mean, he's been injured for almost 2 years. He's coming back this year trying to get some plays in the game. He makes plays here and there. So, you know, the ideal to sell papers and to make things go, you got to have a story somewhere. So that's their story for right now.
Yeah, don't ever let facts get in the way of a good headline.
Never.
Not when you're a newspaper guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else?
I just want to say that let's go Giants first, and let's make the playoffs for the first time since a long time.
Yep.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. Can we go to Al on line 4? You're in San Diego. Hello, Al.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Very good. How we doing, Al?
All right, not bad. Hey, the last caller kind of stole a little bit of my thunder there. I totally agree with the critics. You know, like you guys said, they're there to sell papers, and that's what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And we just got to avoid all that negativity and focus on the positive. 10-4 is great. I don't think a lot of us saw that coming. We knew we had a good team, but we beat some very strong teams, including Dallas twice. So big ups to the Giants on that. My only question was, and it's regarding Victor Cruz, his contract situation. I know that he had I think it was a 5-year, 40 and some change. I know he renegotiated prior to this season, is what I've read. I've tried doing some research on what the renegotiation was, as far as if there was any years cut off of it. Do you guys have any inside info on that?
You just want to know the duration of how many years he has left?
Correct.
All right. Yeah, that shouldn't be too hard for me to call up. That's easy to find.
Yeah, he signed a 5-year deal. And he took.
He's a free agent after the 2018 season.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So on that, is there a big cap number that we would save if we cut him? Do you have access to that?
Well, yeah, but you know what? We don't usually get into those numbers, and I'll tell you exactly why. Because no matter what you find through your research, there are contractual deals that are made. There are renegotiations that are made. There are all kinds of things that happen between the front office and players that people don't know about. And then all of a sudden, it's reported in the paper that so-and-so's got a cap number of X. And the truth is, it's only Y because they redid a deal that they didn't tell people about.
Yeah.
I don't want to go. Gotcha. I really don't want to go there because that just doesn't make sense.
It could be anything. Then you have, like, thresholds of time also, that if something happens by this time, things happen. If it happens by another time, something else happens. There's so much that that we don't know. Again, you can only get the numbers from what they have reported.
Yeah, there's too many variables involved. It would be irresponsible to go through those numbers here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gotcha. At the end of the day, I think, it's a match meant to be, and hopefully he gets healthier. He's looking pretty good out there. He don't seem to have a separation that he used to, but he's definitely still a threat, and defenses have to account for him. So I think that's a huge benefit for us. And hopefully he comes through at the end here, make the playoffs, and have another drive.
It'd be great.
I appreciate you guys.
Be cool.
Appreciate
Thank
you guys taking my call. Great show. Watching you guys or hearing you guys out here from San Diego. So keep up the good work. Appreciate it.
Good stuff. Nice. I think Giants have a road trip. Let's see, 4 road trips out west already identified because of the way that the schedule rotation is. Mm-hmm. They'll be out in San Francisco, mm-hmm. Oakland, Arizona, and Denver next season.
Nice. San Francisco and Oakland.
Yeah.
Wow. That's going to be interesting.
Well, Santa Clara, actually, not San Francisco, because okay. that's the new park out there, right?
The new park is in Santa Clara.
Although the Oakland park, who knows now, right? That whole Vegas thing.
We could be in Vegas.
Although that's not going to happen that quickly.
Not that quick, but we could be in Vegas. That'd be funny.
Peter from Philadelphia. How about that? You're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I know. Calling from enemy lines this week.
All right. What do you have?
Well, first off, I want to say big-time fan, guys. Paul, love you. Howard, love you guys. Love
Thank
your
you,
show.
Sir.
Spend my lunch hour every day listening to you guys. So definitely excited, first-time caller. So first off, big point I want to bring up to you guys. Obviously, everybody knows the defense, especially the last couple weeks, playing really, really well. Just want to talk a little bit about the linebackers. I feel like they're not getting enough credit. They've really shut down. Obviously, I know our secondary is really helping out with the tight ends and them doing the biggest damage. We haven't faced a big check down running back since Le'Veon Bell, and he kind of tore us up. But I feel like the last couple of weeks, what do you think about the linebacker play? And especially now Casillas being on the injury report, how do you guys feel about that?
I think they've done a great job. You know, Casillas, you got Kennard, you got Shepard, you got Robinson, and even Goodson's got it in the game here of late. So they're mm-hmm. all getting in, they're all rotating, they all bring a little extra fire to the game. Also, Robinson's doing a great job covering the tight ends and short routes and getting to the back out of the backfield. So and sometimes, believe it or not, Landon Collins at his safety position is playing at linebacker depth. So that little part of the field is like a no-fly zone right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I completely agree. Landon Collins is just an absolute monster this year. You see, I was at the game on Sunday, and just watching that guy all over the field, man, seeing that live, it's a thing of beauty. So really getting to see those boys run around is absolutely awesome, and I'm just happy how our linebackers have stepped up because that's kind of been our Achilles heel the past couple weeks, prior to these ones. Okay. Next point I just wanted to bring up is, obviously, I'm just jumping on now, so I'm not sure if you guys touched about, Shane Vereen, losing him for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
I love Shane Vereen, what he did for us last year to bring that explosive check down back to our offense, but I'm not too worried about it. What do you guys feel? Is this a time now to really start unleashing Paul Perkins, Rashad Jennings? Does he take the back seat? How are we feeling on our run game?
Here's the one thing I will tell you, and I'm not going to do a double take on this because I've been telling people throughout the course of the season, one of the reasons the Giants' third down conversion rate and maybe even their offensive red zone rate is down is because Shane Vereen's a very valuable weapon.
Yep.
And I think that missing him has been so underrated and so undervalued. This guy, he can pick up the blitz. He can run the ball between the tackles. He can even get to the outside. He's got some jukes in him.
Uh-huh.
And he catches the ball extremely well, which, of course, is really his number one priority. So you can't underestimate the value of him. And I thought it was horrible that he had missed most of the season. And so I'm not going to do an about-face here. I thought it was going to be so great for the Giants to get him back. And now that he's out again, I'm disappointed. And guys like Perkins do have to take more of the load. Jennings, maybe Bobby Rainey takes some snaps too. They got to find a way to kind of replace what Vereen did, and they haven't really done it all year.
Well, I give you that. I think Vereen was so valuable to the offense last year. He helped a lot, check downs, getting the ball out quickly. But they do have guys on the team that can do that. With the Rainey, with the Perkins, it's going to be interesting to see if they're going to make it, you know, make that jump and start incorporating them more into the game plan. It's not just checking through the line or something. It's understanding the space that you need to be in when you're out there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens as they go forward with the, you know, with the Vereen situation.
I'll tell you what, the time is now, and if Paul Perkins has an increased role and it's in that type of environment and that kind of role, it's going to be time. I mean, there's just no other way to do it. You got to make it happen.
Yeah, or you have to reincorporate Rainey and give him some opportunities catching the ball. He's a returner, so it'll make him really shifty out in the open space.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, that's why we brought Bobby Rainey in to kind of, you know, obviously once Shane Vereen first went down, to kind of, you know, be that next guy. You know, obviously he's shown some glimpses of what he can do. Paul Perkins, I feel like, man, if that guy can get some hands on him and stay consistent with that, he could be dangerous in the open space. But so thanks for that, guys. Mom, last point here, obviously we've really, really, really stumbled down here in Philadelphia. And obviously me being down here, I've really taken some backlash from some of my friends, you know, of the dominance that Lincoln Financial, that the Eagles display for the Giants. But I feel really, really good about this week, regardless of some of the guys. I know Janoris going down, short turnaround, it's tough to get him back. But I just feel really confident in our and I think the biggest thing about this year is the next man up. I forgot who had mentioned it before, but having that brotherhood this year is really shown more. Just like they want to be the next guy to step up and not let their teammates down. But you know, just coming from you guys, and again, you know, I'm not sure if you touched on this in the first half of the show, but how are you guys feeling about us this week going to enemy territory? Obviously, they have nothing left to play for, but they're known for being spoilers and. You know, this is going to be no easy matchup. I feel like I'm almost more nervous than the last two home games against Dallas and the Lions.
Well, I tell you what, I think that, you know, going into this game, and I'm speaking from a person on the outside, just like you guys are, you go into this game and you want to put the team at risk, meaning the Eagles. You want to get them, you know, in a position where they're making turnovers. They're not playing as well as they want. And when that starts to happen, there'll be guys, you know, undoubtedly, even though they're saying they want to fight all the way through, there'll be guys that will, like, you know, start to pull that tent up a little bit, start thinking about, okay, where am I going with the family when the holidays.
That way against the Ravens last week?
It wasn't that way.
They fought them tooth and nail.
They did, but like I said, it's one of those things that if, you know, I think they got a good coach. I think their coach has got them in the right frame of mind. But if you get after them and you stay after them, it will give you will get a chance. But like I tell people all the time, no one wants to quit. No one wants to go home early. So for the Giants, for them, they got to make them want to, you know, let it go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I completely agree. We know what the Eagles, you know what the Eagles can do. You know what they've done to us last couple of years. Obviously, us having them at MetLife, you know, they scored some points on our defense and showed some fight. But, you know, we came out victors in that, so I'm hoping we can do the same thing. But, hey, listen, guys, really, really appreciate you taking my call. You know, I listen to you guys every single day. Love you, too.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Don't trash talk too much, Peter, because this is a tough game. Make no mistake about it. Tough game.
I'm not trash talking them. I'm just saying that, you know, in a game like this, you know that one team, when they don't have anything to play for, you know, they're playing, quote-unquote, for pride.
Look what the Panthers did last night to the Redskins.
Hey, look, the Panthers, they owed that to somebody.
Ooh,
but
man.
We'll see.
That defense was really flying.
Absolutely.
We have a Twitter comment here, and it kind of bleeds into a question I'd like to ask Howard about.
Okay.
We had just talked so glowingly about Romeo Okwara against Dallas, and then the question here from one of the Twitter folks, Robert Forcini, says, didn't hear much from Okwara against the Lions. How much did he play? Well, the Giants did get Okwara in there for 36 snaps, which was 58% of the defensive plays. Kennard was in there for 42, and some of those were on the line. Mm-hmm. Some of them were at linebacker. We also got, on the stat sheet, 15 snaps, it says, out of Odighizuwa, which was 24% of the plays, and Kerry Wynn had 9 snaps, which was 15%. So once again, it was divided up. I think Kennard probably had a little more of some of those line snaps that Okwara might have gotten against Dallas, but he played well.
He played,
I'm trying to figure out where the numbers are.
What happens is that, like when you're watching defense, I've said this before, you're graded on sacks. That's what people see, sacks, quarterback hits. I think he had a quarterback hit, a quarterback hurry in the game. I know he batted the ball down at the line of scrimmage. So he was making plays. He was making tackles in the run game, keeping and holding his edge to keep the running back.
Okwara had one solo, one assist, and that was it for his stat line.
But again, so when you hold the edge and they run inside of you, and Snacks and all those guys knocked that guy
down.
Oh,
yeah. Oh.
Okay, so that's
– I had no problem with
job.
How he played.
Yeah.
The gentleman was just asking about the snap count, and he definitely played fewer snaps than he had the game before.
Okay.
That's all.
I understand. He said he didn't hear his name call. I was explaining to him.
Oh, well, yeah, that answers that part of the question. I answered the playing time. He answered the quality of play.
Okay.
I would add, though, that Kennard played well.
Everybody played well. They did good.
Yeah.
They did good. Everybody who was in there played well. Kerry Wynn got in for his few plays. He played well.
I am happy for Kennard. He's a good guy, and you know, he's fought through some injuries the first few years of his career, and they really seem to have found a good niche for him right now.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
All right, let's see if we have any other Twitter comments. Yeah, we have another one here asking about Okwara once again, so we already answered that one.
Yep.
Ben Gruen says he doesn't think the Giants will pay Cruz a lot going forward. He says he may not fit. And, you know, he's kind of curious about the future of Victor. I'll say this. I think Victor Cruz wants to be a Giant. I think the fact that he's come through this season only missing one game so far is a miracle, considering what he has come back from, Howard.
Okay.
And you know what? After being off for a year and a half of not playing football, I don't know where his top-level athleticism is right now, but they usually tell you after having leg injuries that first year back – you always have to work out some of that rust anyway. Maybe there's more to Victor next year. I don't know the answer to that.
No one knows. So it's going to be up to Victor, his off-season training, how he's going to get himself back. They'll reevaluate. Like the interviews are always famous around, you know, around the NFL. What they're talking to you about, what they're hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
Different coaches do it different ways. It'd be interesting to hear how Coach McAdoo does it. You know, in about 4 or 5 weeks when this is all over with, 6 weeks. I don't know how long it is to the Super Bowl. I'm trying to get us all on our way out there. I can't, but it should be interesting.
All right, we have Shane Hall says, I want one more Super Bowl win. It will end all of Eli's critics. 3 Super Bowl wins will shut up the negativity.
I tell you what, when you think about Eli Manning, and I hear this a lot about, you know, is he that good of a quarterback? For one, I'm going to knock on wood. Doesn't miss games, which means his greatest ability may be his availability. Two, despite who's in front of him, he plays. Mm-hmm. Three, sometimes he was throwing the ball to guys that weren't – it seemed like he always had great receivers. Then he has a great receiver. He's able to get it done. He's done this without a dominant tight end. A tight end that's been,
that's true,
you know, dominating the game. He's done this without having a dominant running game. He did it last year playing his best year without having a dominant defense. Just kept playing. The thing that we get trapped with or get caught up in is like, how many playoff wins does he have? How many times did he lead his team into the playoffs? And I know the quarterback's the most important position in all of football, but it takes a whole team to get it done.
I'm going to make this very simple. Let's just cut it right down to the very bare bones. When the man had the opportunity in the biggest spots in the world, did he get it done?
He got it done. But people don't like that. They want it all. Like I always tell people, do you want the 2 Super Bowl wins or do you want to go to the playoffs every year? I'm like, make your choice. You can go to playoffs every year. Be like Andy Dalton. Show up. Done. Good. See y'all later. Appreciate your time. I'm glad I could be here. Thank you very
Phillip
much.
Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, Phillip Rivers. Shows up. You know, and Phillip's great example of a guy that's got great numbers.
Tony Romo.
Yeah. Another guy with great numbers. You get good numbers, but you just can't get over the hump. That first Super Bowl that Eli was in, that game out in San Francisco, kid took a beating. Hung in there. Found a way to win. I mean, and it wasn't just him. It was special teams. It was everything. But those kind of things are things that people remember you for. Now, again, you're never as great until after you're gone. So while you're here, there's always going to be something wrong with him.
Parcells said the same thing about Phil Simms.
You're never great until after you're gone.
B. Schultz wants to know, why do we not see Jarrell Adams running seam routes with his tremendous speed and height off of the play action?
I don't know. I mean, like, again, I don't know why the plays are called the way they're called. I don't understand the route consistency of what's going on and why they're trying to get players wherever they're trying to get them on the field. I don't know. I don't know the theory behind it. So I'm watching and excited. Like I said, I saw a game the other night where safeties were standing out almost on the numbers on both sides. I'm thinking, oh, man, they're going through the seam. Somebody's going to be running the out and up. Somebody's going to be doing it. But it didn't happen.
Give us a quick thumbnail, though, of what you have seen from Jarrell Adams since the season progressed when he wasn't playing at all. Then he started getting more snaps at Larry Donnell's expense. And now in the last month, he's even getting the ball thrown to him a little more, too.
I think he, you know what, the thing that got him on the field was his willingness to get in there and fight a little bit and block. That got him on the field. The toughness that I need you, I'll do whatever you need me to do kind of thing. Once that happens, then he starts catching a couple passes. Because you can't just be in the game to run the ball, because if you do that, everybody knows that you're coming to what you're coming to the
exactly.
game for. So now they start throwing him a couple passes. Now you're seeing him, oh, man, he can catch the ball. Oh, wow. Like, okay, so now that he's catching the ball, it's like a progression. There's one more piece. And the progression is, and I don't think fans really understand or can get this, like, kid's a good player. And it's probably going to be a really, really good player. But the Giants run predominantly no huddle offense. Now, it's not a hurry up or anything, but they just never huddle. So if they're never huddling, there's no, hey, Paul, you're going to run the out and up on this play, right? Okay, so there's none of that. So you got to look over to your quarterback. He's giving you signals. He's called out a number and a formation, and these guys got to hustle over to the formation. Then he signals again, so they have to know what all that means.
And I guarantee you his college playbook wasn't like this.
Nobody's college playbook is like that. They're like, you know, when you watch college football, the thing that hurts me about college football, and you see it almost every week, is that down said hut, and then both teams, the defense looks at their sideline and the offense looks at their sideline.
A lot of times, yeah.
And the coaches are so involved in what's happening that the players aren't not always thinking of what to do and getting that instinct of, okay, so I know where he's going to be, I know where he's going to be, and calling and dictating. Even Alabama, sometimes their whole team will stop and look over to the sideline like, hey, what we do now? So, like, I think that's kind of odd. So when these
that's
kids,
gonna, if they don't save it, won't let them eat
for
a week.
I mean, what are you going to do? Coach tells me to look over here. I'm looking over to see what he wants.
Back to Twitter, we have I Am Will Ruiz says, looking forward to seeing those Color Rush uniforms on Thursday. That is all. Remember, that's the new throwback versions that you wore with the Giants on the side of the helmet.
That's pretty cool. I like the Giants on the side of the helmet.
That's going to be neat.
That's going to be really cool. That goes way back. I got a few of those helmets in the house that you know from my years playing. The NY is cool. I like that. But the old Giants, that's how I remember coming into the league.
Phil Simms LT uniforms.
Absolutely.
You're going to get a little emotional on the sidelines, aren't you?
No, I'm going to be a little cold on the sidelines. Talking about
hopefully not wet.
Yeah. If it's something that you see coming out of my eyes, a tear from the wind.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Let's see here. Satch says, talking about Sean O'Hara, said he had something to say on the NFL Network, I guess, about his San Francisco game where he took the 6 sacks and talked about Eli's toughness, which is something you referred to.
Yep.
Satch is saying Cam would have been crying. Well, you know, Cam Newton is just trying to protect his own health because he's certainly getting pounded by guys over the last couple of years. But you are right about Eli, and that's certainly that's something that we all will never forget because he got battered in that San Francisco game. One Bad Hombre says the Giants haven't had a 100-yard game from a tight end since Shockey in November of 2007. That is what we're missing.
You know, you're always missing something, but I'll take the 10 wins. like I said, it's going to come. It's shocking how after Shockey, you know, Kevin Boss comes in and you're like, Kevin, oh, man, is he going to – oh, he played great. Then the next guy comes in like, oh, man, oh, he played great. So they keep thinking they're going to find that, you know, they're lightning in the bottle somewhere down the road.
I tell you what.
It keeps popping up.
Kevin Boss caught a big pass in Arizona in that Super Bowl, though, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
All right, we have a few more calls to get to before the show's over. D in Atlanta, you're next on the program. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Paulie? How you doing?
Hey, good to talk to you.
What's going on, D?
Good. What's going on, Howard? You guys mentioned Cruz a second ago. You know, it's funny because I think he still has a lot in the tank, but I feel like from a strategic standpoint, it seems like we phased him out. And I know he's out of position from his strength and, you know, where he's been most productive for us. I feel like I said, I think he has a lot in the tank, but I feel like if we're going to continue to use him that way, what's going to happen is we'll probably just phase him out and get a bigger receiver to, you know, run out to those nine routes and, you know, somebody that has some size on the outside. Mm-hmm. And sadly, I feel like he's probably going to end up in Philly just because, I mean, I just think it's going to work out that way. Honestly, I think they don't have any receivers, and I feel like him, they'll work it out with DeSean Jackson, and that'll be that, unfortunately. But I think we have it there. I have a question for you, Howard, and I've been wondering this. So, you know, we lost the Johnson guy that we got from Pittsburgh in
Will
all
Johnson.
Season. Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize how much that affected our running game potentially because he could do both. He was a great fullback. He could play tight end. I look at Ty and I say, okay, this guy doesn't really look like necessarily a big tight end. What is it from a strategy or technique standpoint that you think stops them from potentially using him at fullback in certain situations?
He's in there at fullback a lot. I don't think people realize that he pulls up through the holes. Sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, early in the year, we were talking about him not being prepared for what he was doing because he probably hadn't done that in college.
Sure.
He was learning as he's going. Now you see him more and more. I think the team ran a lot of 12 personnel this week, more than they usually run. And it was very effective when he was doing it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's great. That's nice to know. Maybe I just didn't notice it because I was thinking that, like, why don't we use him at fullback? He looks like more like a fullback / H-back than a tight end anyway, me.
He catches ball pretty well.
He really, you know, get his 0 to 60 isn't that quick, but once he gets going, he's moving.
I like that. He's a good player. I'm going to say that to him when I see him later.
Thank you, D.
Yeah. One.
Oh yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Dave. All right, sorry, D. Please call us back again tomorrow. Tim from Orlando, we're running out of time, but I want to get to you and one more caller. Go ahead.
Hey Howard. Hey Paul.
Hi.
Good to hear from you.
Hey.
You too, sir.
It was great to see you in MetLife, Paul, after that big win against the Cowboys.
Well, you know what? I really love the fans, Howard. You know, when we come off the sidelines after the game's over, I'm usually popping on to get some interviews on the field. And then Howard and I run inside, and sometimes we do the coaches' club. Sometimes I'm meeting Jeff Fiegel's in there. And the fans, like, congregate by where the Giants go to the locker room.
Yep.
And they're high-fiving everybody, and they're, go Giants, and they're waving the towels, and they're – It's a real festive atmosphere after they win.
Paulie likes that.
I always try to say hi to the fans. They're cool.
That's good. You should.
I will say.
Without you guys, we don't do what we do.
Exactly. We wouldn't have a show.
I will say, though, I am just on top of the world with how our G-men are playing. And then the Redskins lost last night, too, which was nice.
Yeah, that was a tough loss for them. I thought they probably thought they had a shot, but Cam Newton and crew came in to play.
And now we don't have to worry about them passing us because they're out of it.
That is true.
I've been most impressed, and I know we've talked about it before, but with how we responded. JPP went down. I was worried about that. We responded against Dallas. And Janoris Jenkins went down. We responded again. I heard that he's okay with his bruised back. I mean, he's been so good. I think we should just give that man the week off. He deserves it. And these Philly receivers do not scare me.
Well, we, you know, who scares me is their tight end.
Ertz can do a lot of damage.
We just need to figure out a way to keep him under wraps. If they can do that, him and little Sproles, because I think Mr. Sproles is
practicing
after
his
concussion protocol, so now
he's
can back. Practice. So you have two intermediate guys that can cause a lot of damage, so they're going to be on their P's and Q's for this weekend.
Yep.
And more props to our season-long offensive MVP. That's Brad Wing, pinning them at the one every single time. Sometimes I wonder if we're better off just kneeling three times and then letting him put it down inside the five.
Definitely not, but Brad Wing has been phenomenal.
And please don't leave Dwayne Harris out of that conversation. Yeah, he's done a lot of great things.
He's been awesome.
Yep.
I mean, he got held that one time. He still got up and made the tackle in the open field.
That was impressive.
My question is this. At what point do we name Paul Perkins the starter?
I don't know if you do. I think that they're still, you know, fighting their way through. You need – there's no – how do I say this? There are no more days of Emmitt Smith, except for maybe in Dallas. I think Zeke kind of carries the load, and then he spots, and he'll let somebody come spot him. But outside of Zeke in the league, it's very hard to get guys that can play that many plays, 30 carries in the game, 25 or 30 carries.
Yeah, the bell cows are gone.
Yeah, they don't do it anymore. So you're going to need both guys. If you get 30 carries, you need about, you know, a 20-10 mix, a 15-15 mix, unless one guy just happens to have one of those days where he looks unstoppable. You ride the hot hand, but if you don't have a hot hand, you just got to keep kind of get what you're going to get.
Tim, I got to run. I want to get one more caller in, okay? But thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Let's go to Doug from New York. You're the final caller on the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of the previous callers stole my questions about the blocking fullback and Terrell Adams, but I had a third question. Given the short week, what's the typical schedule in terms of practice and what they do with only 3 days between a game, Sunday to Thursday? Can you give us an idea what the Giants do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this week?
Well, what's happened is that the coaches have already done the best way to explain it. They've already done the scouting and they're ready for the game. And they've tried to put the game plan together the night of that last game that they played. So Monday morning they come in. Guys are, you know.
No. They stayed over Sunday night. They weren't even going home on Sunday night.
Well, the players. So the players come in Monday morning. They can't really do that much because you got to have an off day, so they give them the day off. But they're watching film, they're prepping, and they're doing the mental installation of their what would be their Wednesday practice. Then on Tuesday, they kind of go through their Wednesday practice, and they've already started to do their Thursday practice. And on Wednesday, the day before the game, they've pretty much had everything installed. The practice schedule is minimal. There's more mental installations and there are actual practice time because you just can't run and get yourself going and get a lift and get your body back in tune. So you want to make sure that you get your guys as fresh as possible, but mentally prepared. That's why you see so many questionable games on Thursday nights because guys aren't, their bodies are just not ready to play. They're mentally aren't on target and you're just trying to basically do a wash of what you just learned from another team and like, okay, I got to study all night to get ready. It's like cramming for an exam.
Does it help that we're playing a division foe that we're familiar with?
No, it doesn't help because every week, you know, things don't linger like people think they would because once you do everything you can to play Detroit, Detroit's running game, Detroit's quarterback, you think your way through that, then you got to go out and look at something totally different. So if you're standing in one spot 1 week, then you got to move over a little bit. You got to know that. You got to know formations and personnel. That's why you see on the sideline them holding up 11 personnel, 12 personnel, 21. They're trying to alert the defense of who's coming into the game. And when you don't have alone time to prepare for it, those guys become even more important.
Could the Eagles have
changed that much from the first time we played them, though? They are who they are.
It doesn't work that way. I'm telling you. I mean, for a fan, it's simple. Like, oh, we're playing the same team again. For players, you learn something new every week when you're watching a team that you're about to play. And so you play Dallas twice. You hope that they're going to stay in the same thing. But it takes a week of progress to get to that, you know, that game on the weekends. This Thursday night game, and I'm not beating on the NFL, or I know it's a lot of money in it and everything, but this Thursday night game, you already don't have the practice time because we've bargained away actual practice. Now you're asking guys to go out and just, hey, look, you have to do this just mentally. Can you figure it out? And you're hoping that when you're seeing this team, like I said, the guys did the fist bump. Yay, great win. Great to beat Detroit. And they were handed disc as they're walking out the door, the little key cards, so they can plug them into their computers when they get home that night. They started watching the game that day. They don't even watch the games that are coming up. They're watching their game because if they're smart, they're trying to practice and go through what's first and 10, what's second and five, what's red zone, what's this, what's that. You have to do that because you just don't have time.
I would only say one thing to you that is somewhat of a good thing in this situation is that the Giants were home this past Sunday at a 1 o'clock game, and that allowed them to get maximum time on Sunday to do what they had to do to get a head start. Because if you're on the road, let's say you played a 4 o'clock game in Kansas City or right. Oakland or San Francisco, and now you got to worry about that trip all the way back, and you lose that travel time, you know. At least in this particular case, all the Giants coaches had to do was walk across the parking lot,
yep.
and they were already in their offices, and they were ready for their all-nighters. So that's good. And then the other thing that's good is the game was just down the turnpike, so they're not going to lose any travel time on Wednesday either.
No, no.
Very minimal.
They don't lose any minimal. Travel time, but again, it's a lot more – it's way more involved than people think. I think the Thursday night games are, again, a lot of money. Love seeing football. Love seeing a lot of football. But the Thursday night games, it's almost impossible to prepare for a team in 3 or 4 days. If you're an offense, if I'm an offensive team and I want to give you a problem, I just put in two formations that are different. Now, you come in saying, like, that we've seen the same thing from these guys. We know them well. I put in two formations that are different, and all of a sudden, you're guessing.
Then you're not prepared, and that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We got to run.
Okay,
I just want Howard to give one quick comment here on the last Twitter comment. Wants to know about using Newhouse as a tight end, lining him up behind Pugh or with a fourth receiver on third and long to kind of help pick up the pressure. We've talked about using the jumbo package and the extra tight end or the extra lineman as a tight end before, and I know I like it. I know David Deal likes it. I think you like it too, when necessary.
I think it's more of a run situation.
I agree.
Thing.
I agree.
I think that what you have to do, because I used to do it all the time, I used to chip before I would release for a route. And that chip can make all the difference in the world to a tackle for a tackle struggling in the game.
All right. That'll do it for today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Again, we're here on Giants.com every Monday to Friday from noon until 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Jot down the number. You can call next time, 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat. For Howard Cross, I'm Paul Tatino. We'll see you again next time.